if we want people to be willing to come out of hiding and share their stories, then we're going to have to speak about this topic with grace and love instead of anything that's condemning or judgmental.
Hello, I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute, and thanks for joining us today for Straight Talk on Life Issues.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves. Always great to be with you. You know, more women and men at least consider abortion than we may realize.
Research shows many women and men in a pregnancy crisis think, this is the end of my life as I know it.
When these women and men are faced with the challenge of a pregnancy crisis, you can be a real blessing by knowing how to speak to them. They need to know that you care about them for their own sake and that they are not alone.
And listening. Listening will help build trust with them and facilitate openness. You can share the truth in love. And part of that truth is there's forgiveness and redemption through the blood of Christ after abortion.
That's right. And today we'll be talking about how to speak to someone who has an abortion in their past or even people who may be considering an abortion with three very special guests. First joining us is Tori Shaw, a mother, author, speaker, and the director of Not Forgotten Ministries. We're also joined by Sheila Harper, the founder and president of Save One, an international outreach ministry for men, women, and families suffering in silence after an abortion. We're also joined by her husband, Jack Harper, the vice president and men's director for Save One.
Tori, Sheila, Jack, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
Yeah.
This is a very sensitive issue we're going to be talking about. Can't think of better people to discuss with. First of all, Tori and Sheila, I'd like you to briefly tell us your story. Tori, let's start with you.
Well, I was 16 years old and I was super sick, throwing up for weeks. And my mom ended up taking me to the pediatrician. And that's where I found out I was pregnant. And I had no clue. I was very naive. And the doctor herself was actually probably about 8 months pregnant. And she is the one that made the abortion appointment for me. And I remember saying to her, gosh, you must hate me, you know, having to make an appointment like that for me when you're so pregnant. And she said, oh, no, honey, if I were 16, I would have an abortion too. And so I think that made me think it was okay, even though deep down I knew it wasn't. And my mom was in the room and she went along with that. And so the very next morning, my mom took me to the abortion clinic. So I didn't know that I was pregnant for even 24 hours. And so that experience was awful for me. I always tell people I walked in one way and walked out a completely different person. I started to hide. I started doing drugs and alcohol, and many years went by where I don't know how I made it. I really don't know. I look back and I'm like, God must have just picked me up and put me on the other side because I was just trying so desperately to forget what had happened, to numb myself. And it was 17 years before I ever even spoke about my abortion, even to my mom who took me or the boy that got me pregnant, who's now my husband. We never talked about it at all for 17 years. And so when I finally did talk about it and let God in that part of my life, he's just done amazing things with it. I never was going to do this. I was never going to talk about this. I was never going to do anything like this, but God did it. You know, I just, once I was willing, he did it.
Isn't it wonderful how he takes the ashes of our lives and does some pretty spectacular stuff with us?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Sheila, how about you?
Well, so much of my story parallels yours, Tori. I mean, it's a common theme that we hear a lot of times, all of the things that we went through. But I was 19 when I found out I was pregnant. I was in college and I went to my best friend and she said, oh, just have an abortion. It's no big deal. I had one when I was 15. And I remember thinking, well, if she said it's no big deal, it must be no big deal, you know. I had always thought it was a big deal, but I went to her. She helped me make the appointment. As the appointment got closer and closer, I was thinking about the Supreme Court, and I thought, well, surely they wouldn't make a law that was bad for me, right? So I trusted the government. I trusted politicians and celebrities were telling me that this was my right and my choice, and she had said it's no big deal. It was like I had all of these voices telling me one thing, but I knew in my gut and in my heart, it really felt like a big deal. It really felt like I was doing something wrong, but I couldn't figure out what it was because everybody was telling me it was okay. So I went through with it. It was a horrible, just like you, Tori, it was a horrible experience. I did it in a clinic, and I would never wish my worst enemy to ever be in a clinic like that. It was a horrible place. And so as soon as I got out of there, immediately, almost immediately, I started numbing myself. It was like within 2 weeks, the boy that I was with, he broke up with me. He did not want the abortion. I mean, you know, men get so unfairly stereotyped in this situation, but he didn't want the abortion. He broke up with me 2 weeks later. I knew exactly why, and I don't blame him one bit. But it was from that point I started just numbing myself with drugs and alcohol. Within 2 years, I attempted suicide. I tried to die many different ways, just taking massive amounts of drugs and drinking huge quantities of alcohol. And in the middle of it all, I met Jack. We had 2 children right away. I became that helicopter parent where I kept feeling like I got to stay one step ahead of God so he doesn't take my children away and to make me pay for what I did. I took my whole family on this crazy emotional roller coaster I was on. And then finally, I found my way to a Bible study, a lot like the one Save One offers now. And it changed my life. For one, I was in a room with people who were telling my story, just like Tori just did. It was like this common experience, and it helped me realize this was a big deal. This was a really big deal, what I did. And this is a thing that people suffer afterward. And so from there, I haven't been able to be quiet about it since then, because it's the truth. It's the truth of what really happens to you after this choice.
Jack, if you could explain briefly your situation specifically and how you were pulled into the men and abortion aspect.
Sheila and I met in the middle of her 7 years of being unhinged after her abortion. And I was at the time an alcoholic. So we were two big hot messes. In our short dating career, we just decided that we ought to be one big hot mess and get married. And so we did that. And so Sheila says this, so I'm not outing her in this. She was a different person every day when I came home. She was sometimes June Cleaver with her apron on and the house is spotless and she's cooking. You're laughing at that scenario, Brad. That's funny. And then
I could be domestic.
Yeah. Other times I've come home and she's, you know, she's balled up on the couch and she's crying. And here I am, somebody that doesn't have a relationship with the Lord. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help, and offered some really bad advice to her. And that didn't help, made it worse. So we were struggling. And to be a man who sees that his wife is having a hard time with something and not have any suggestions or any answers, it's really tough. And to see them go through that, it was just a hard situation. She found the Bible study, or the Bible study, God just opened the pathway to this Bible study that gave her her life back. Once he gave her her life back and she had this relationship with Jesus, she's like, okay, if God will do that for me, then he can do that for Jack. So I'll just make him my project. If you've never been anybody's project, that is just the most fun thing ever. I can tell you that. So she just wants me to be in church. She knows that's the answer for me to have an encounter with Jesus. So eventually, after about 6 years, I had a moment in church. I gave my life to the Lord, and then deliverance happened from the alcohol. And so now I have the ability to walk with her in that. So not knowing all of that time is exactly why we have the ripple effect for our ministry. The ripple effect is where I was. I was in something that I didn't know what to do with or how to help. And so that helped me with healing for sure.
Well, Tori, Sheila, and Jack, I'd like each of you to just give us a brief introduction on how you personally speak to someone who has abortion in their past. Tori?
So for me, I mean, obviously, since I've had an abortion, I can speak to that because, you know, we have things in common. We probably felt very similar to one another. But my thought about how we should speak to women who have had abortions doesn't just happen when we're talking to that person, but when we're talking in general about abortion and when we are posting on social media and all of those things, everything we say and do, they are watching, they are listening, they are aware of what people think. They might not tell you they've had an abortion, but they know who would be accepting of them and who wouldn't. And so if we want people to be willing to come out of hiding and share their stories, which I truly believe will change things in the pro-life movement if more and more women begin and men begin sharing their stories. If we want that to happen, we're going to have to speak about this topic with grace and love instead of anything that's condemning or judgmental.
Sheila, how about you?
Well, I echo everything that Tori said. They're watching, and we want to draw people to us, not repel them away. And if you're posting on social media and calling men and women who have had abortions murderers, and you're constantly saying that abortion is horrible and wrong, which, I mean, we know that it is, but if you're just pushing that point and not talking about the grace and forgiveness and healing that's available through Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. then they're not going to come to you for help because it doesn't feel like a safe place. But if we listen, like, you've really got to listen. You can't just come at somebody with Bible verses and cliches or call them names or question, how could you do that? Or, you know, there's always all of these circumstances that surround this choice. And when we really listen and become their friend and become that safe place that's non-judgmental, then they come out of the woodwork, literally, because they know, oh, I can go to this church and deal with this, or I can call this person and talk about this, and they're not going to judge me and reject me. And so having that listening ear, that's the main thing, not listening, getting your response ready, but really listening and being that friend to them.
Jack, what would you add?
Mostly when I'm talking with somebody, it's from the men's perspective. I'm talking to men. And one of the things that Sheila just said was the circumstances in which people come, you know, and have this abortion wound or they have this experience. Men will maybe not had a voice at all in it, or they were complicit, or they coerced, or there's forced abortion. Mm-hmm. There's just all of these scenarios. And so, like Sheila said, you have to listen, and you have to understand who you're talking to, because everybody's path is different. For me, with a man, I might be dealing with someone who has grief and sorrow, but he doesn't have guilt because he didn't make the decision. And so listening is, I think it's the key, as Sheila said, to be the compassionate response to the abortion issue instead of that militant response.
Yeah.
I guess, maybe.
Harsh.
To be nice. Yeah.
You almost have a praise God moment or moments ministering to others who have experienced abortion. Mm-hmm. Could you share one or two with us, Tori?
I have so many. I actually have written a Bible study as well. I've done the Save One Bible study, loved it. But I wrote a Bible study that we use in our ministry called Free Indeed. And it's different than the others that I've done because it's kind of a bite-sized chunks. It's day by day instead of chapters. And so it's a little more user-friendly for maybe the beginner Christian or someone who is more fresh that they've had their abortions. But we've actually had so many women lately who have joined our online Bible studies that it's only been 2 or 3 months since their abortions. And then we'll have, you know, people in the same little group on Zoom that it's been 50 years. So it's amazing to see the difference between how far and how long it's taken someone to find healing. And then there's this person that's very fresh. And for me, it's such a beautiful thing to know they are not going to walk through the same pain that I did for 17 years or this other person that's 50 years, just to see God already moving in their lives. And we've actually led a couple of ladies to Christ in those Bible studies on Zoom, and such a beautiful thing. At our retreats, also our weekend healing retreats, at our last one, it was so amazing. There was a couple ladies that was 30, 40, 50 years since they had their abortions. And I was able to baptize 7 women in the river by the house.
That's
it was not,
awesome.
Wasn't on our to-do list, you know, it wasn't on our schedule, but it was the most amazing experience for me, but also for them. And it was just, yeah, God is just meets us there in the most amazing ways. We're all vulnerable. We're all humble. And we just are like, okay, God, whatever you want. And it's just incredible what he does.
I love that.
Yeah.
Sheila?
Well, these God moments, there's so many. There's one that we just had just a few months ago. A man came to us and we got him hooked up with one of our men's leaders, and come to find out he had not ever told his wife about his abortion experience. And so at the end of the class, he finally mustered up his nerve and he's like, I've got to confess this to her because it's been eating him alive inside that he's had this secret all of these years. And so he finally confessed to her, at the end of the class, when he got through the Bible study, he confessed to her the abortion experience he had before they got married. And as soon as he finished, she said, "Well, now I have something to tell you."
Oh, goodness.
She had been holding an abortion experience from before they got married.
Yeah.
They both had this secret. And you know, secrets in a marriage make you sick. Like you
yeah.
can't keep secrets like that.
Yeah.
And so then he started working through the Bible study with her. And so it was just absolutely beautiful that they were able to come clean like that, and their marriage healed, and they got so much healthier, and they don't have this secret anymore. And then, of course, we just kicked off. We have a whole division of dealing with sexual trauma, because so many people who come to us for abortion recovery have sexual trauma in their past as well. Well, we just started the sexual trauma piece called Finding You in Slovenia. And we just got the most incredible report just this week of this class that they just went through the Bible study, and it was absolutely beautiful. And a lot of them had had abortions. It helps them heal after abortion. It helps them deal with the sexual trauma. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
When we draw near to God, he really does draw near to us, and things change for the better. And so it's just a beautiful process that's addictive once you get started.
How about you, Jack? What's your praise God moment?
In just walking through the Bible study with men, I have two men that I've just finished up individual studies with. We didn't do them as a group. But the first one, in week two, I asked him, "What is it that you're looking to gain out of this?" And it took him a minute to even get the words out. But he said, "If I could walk through life without shame." And so I know in week 10, when we're finishing up the study, he looked at me with just his bright eyes, and he said, "I have no shame. I'm free." And I'm like, yes, man, that's what God does.
Yeah, if I may take the opportunity to add my praise God moment.
Yeah.
I was talking to a young man. The abortion had been 11 years before. He was involved in church ministry. He wanted to be involved in counseling men. His wife says, "You need to get counseling." And he thought he was all done with that. Well, he came to me and we went through things, and I always assign homework each night for the next week. And this particular week, I asked him to think of a name for his child, and he was going to open his mouth in objection. And I said, "No," I said, "just pick a name and then we'll talk about it when you come back." Well, when he came back, I couldn't even get a word in edgewise.
Wow.
He was so excited, so happy. It was quite the turning point. He said, "Your question or homework changed my life forever."
Oh,
and,
great.
And that was because God made that baby
That's it.
Human.
Yeah.
And not just some spirit out there floating somewhere. This was his flesh and blood child. And he's a father. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's such a privilege to stand, have a ringside seat, and watch the Holy Spirit work. It's just amazing.
Yes.
I'd like to hear from each of you, and what would you do or say to somebody who's considering an abortion? Tori?
So actually, I get calls all the time and text all the time for people that, have a friend or whatever that is considering abortion. And I always will reach out and talk to them. But the way I kind of view it is, have y'all ever seen that picture of the man standing on the side of the bridge, and he was obviously about to jump, but there's all these people on the other side of the bridge with their arms like clasped around his legs and waist, and they're holding him so he cannot fall. And I feel like that's the way we need to talk to people considering abortion. Instead of, if someone were standing on a bridge, we would not show them pictures of someone else who would stand on a bridge. we would not, yell at them and tell them how horrible they are, or what they're doing is a sin. We wouldn't do that. We would run toward them. We would love them. We would give them reasons to hope. We would give them reasons to believe, that there's joy for tomorrow. Like, we would not push them away. And so that's kind of the way I try to envision it when I'm talking to them, is that I'm holding on to them, that I'm showing them love and compassion, and just remembering that everybody's circumstances are completely different. And a lot of us may not think, I would ever choose abortion, but none of those ladies or men usually think they're going to end up there either, and so when you're in that crisis situation, you're not thinking the same way you would now, or, you know, it's not the same. So like putting ourselves in their shoes, trying to understand where they're coming from and just love them well.
Jack, men often put themselves on the sidelines at such times as this, largely based on what society is saying. Yep. Yep. So what is your advice to a man who is facing an unexpected pregnancy and leaning toward abortion?
Well, first of all, I tell them they have a voice for sure, that they are very much involved in this process and that they don't have to back up from that. But then I want them to understand in a very empathetic way, like, you know, I want to have empathy with them, but there are consequences to the decision that they make. There's consequence of life and being a father and getting to raise a child, or there's the consequence of having to deal with that decision, as most of the time they come in their 20s, their teens or 20s. And so I just ask them to look, what is your life going to look like at 30 or 40 or 50? How are you going to view this one event and how did it impact your life? Because I think men compartmentalize things and put them away. And I don't want them to do that in this instance. I want them to open the compartment up and look from, you know, one span to the other and see the full ramifications of what's happening. And I just have to do it in a loving way. That's for sure.
Well, tell us about how you love people no matter what, even if they decide, unfortunately, to move forward with an abortion. How do you go about still loving them, Sheila?
Well, when 9 out of 10 times, if they have chosen abortion after we've talked and they go ahead and go through with it, when they come back to us, they almost always have regret and shame. And they're saying, I wish I had listened. Why did I do that? I knew the moment I walked out of there. You know, it's like they're saying things like that. And to sit and have empathy with them, not say, well, I told you, you were going to feel that way. You know, that's not helping anything. They know that. And so to cry with them, to send them a card, to just keep that door of communication open is huge, because then they know, like, this is genuine. This is really real.
Jack, when we talk about loving people no matter what they choose, is there anything specific or unique that you've noticed about that interaction with men?
I think it's surprising to them because we are acting in a way that they did not expect. Maybe in some cases, you know, like the story of the Good Samaritan, Jesus, when he's telling that parable, he uses the Jewish leaders as people who come by that didn't bring help. But then the help came from a place that was unexpected, which was the Samaritan. And so I feel like if we continue to have that Samaritan response, which is to help somebody that's hurting, that can't physically get themselves or mentally get themselves off of the mat, you know, we show love and respect for them, it eventually changes mindsets.
Well, thank you all for joining us. It's been a real pleasure reconnecting with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Victor, as you know, providing help and healing and counseling to hurting fathers after abortion is near and dear to my heart, something I've been involved in for decades. As soon as that idea hit the horizon, and I must say, we were so encouraged by just how responsive the pro-life movement was to the needs of these hurting fathers.
That's right. And it's so important, as all of our guests really highlighted here today, that as pro-lifers, we remember to present not only truth, but we also have to present grace. We have to have love for the people who are in a very difficult situation.
Absolutely. That has to go hand in hand. And I want to speak to you, the listener. If you are struggling emotionally with an abortion in your past, you can find hope and healing. You can find a non-judgmental peer-to-peer counselor, a free one wherever you live. All you have to do is reach out to us at lifeissues.org, and we will connect you with a person who can help you walk through that healing process.
And you know, Brad, it's so important that the church is a welcome place for people in these situations. And so my encouragement to you, the listener, is to visit our website, lifeissues.org, where you'll find those resources that you can then share with your friends, your family members, and your church community, so that together you and I continue to know the best way to help people in this time of crisis. Again, that's available for free at our website, lifeissues.org. Be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.